Welcome, everyone, to KDVS 90.3 FM Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. Very happy to have you here, and you too soon will be happy because of the cast of characters that I have arrayed to talk to you about important topics in technology and the arts. Bella Merlin is back. She's been on the show a number of times to talk about various offerings of the Department of Theater and Dance here at the University of California, Davis. Starting tomorrow, she'll be starring in a brand new show called Tilly Nobody. It's at the Mondavi Center Theater, named after our former chancellor. And it's a collaboration with the Sideshow Physical Theater Company, Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love. We have a great number of the people who are centrally responsible for this production here in the studio, and I'll be introducing them to you individually in a moment. But if you wanted to find out more about this production, you could point your browser to the UC Davis Department of Theater and Dance. I have visited the website so many times that all I have to do is type in theater, and it brings me right there. But you might have to be a little bit more specific. So we're going to be talking about this production, about theater, dance, music. We'll talk about a symposium that happens a week from Friday, where we investigate some of these topics in academic and intellectual and performative ways. As an excellent complement to the show that you can hear for the next couple weeks. And we'll also talk about music, direction, really all of the elements that come together to put on a great show. And then at the very end of the hour, I'll be joined by Manny Iyer. Manny Iyer is the CEO of Quanzu, which is a multi-channel marketing platform. Sounds impressive, doesn't it? We're going to catch him on the live line, and he's going to tell us about a conference that's coming up in San Francisco a week from tomorrow. So we will mix technology and the arts. We also hope to mix in some music, some different voices, some of them from the same people. Right here on everybody's favorite poetry and technology program, ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis.
True, but if you mean what to say, I love you.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. Longtime listeners of this show know that I do whatever I can to advance the arts and especially cultural offerings in the city of Davis and on campus, especially when I have friends and heroes involved, and such is the case with our next discussion about Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love. It's a show that opens tomorrow evening, hosted by the UC Davis Department, Department of Theater and Dance, and taking place over at the Vanderhoof Theater at the Mondavi Center. The deviser and performer of this particular production is Bella Merlin. Bella Merlin is an actor who we've had on the show a number of times. She's a professor of acting here at UC Davis. She's written a number of books, some of which are taught in university classes, on acting, and she has quite an impressive acting resume herself, including credits such as The Permanent Way, She Stoops to Conquer, A Laughing Matter, and leads in a number of British theaters on television. In fact, when I heard she was coming, before I ever met Bella, I jumped on YouTube and found a few scenes of Bella Merlin in British dramatic roles. She will be taking all of that and so much more with her onto the stage starting tomorrow at the Mondavi Center for this production called Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love. With her, Bella has brought Miles Anderson, the director of the show, David Rosner, the composer and sound designer, and then David Orokorvitz. Orokorvitz is here as well. And he is a sociologist who will be speaking as part of a panel a week from Friday on campus. And Claire Chambers is here. She's a PhD candidate in theater and dance, as well as a researcher into religion and performance. We are going to talk about and around some of the topics raised by this new play called Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love. It opens tomorrow on campus. And first, I'd like to reintroduce you all to Bella Merlin. Bella Merlin, welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you, Andy. It's always a pleasure.
It's great to have you here. So you devised this show from what I remember you telling me perhaps a year ago when we first talked about this. You had acted in a play that was written by, was it the husband, was it the boyfriend of the central character of this new play?
It was the husband. It was a writer called Frank Vedekind. Mm-hmm. And some of your listeners might have heard of a musical called Spring Awakening, which took America by storm about 5 years ago. In fact, based on a play written nearly 100 years ago, actually over 100 years ago, by Frank Vedekind. Mm-hmm. And he also wrote a very famous character called Lulu, who was made into a movie by Louise Brooks, and a Pabst black and white movie. And I was cast as Lulu in London some years ago, and as part of the research, I came across her autobiography, or at least the autobiography of the wife, Tilly. And it was called Lulu, The Role of My Life. And I thought, oh, gosh, this is going to show me how to become an immensely successful actress on the international stage by playing the character of Lulu.
Sure.
What I discovered was it was really how Frank turned Tilly into Lulu in their married life. And Lulu was quite a racy character. So for a husband to want to turn his wife into this racy character was quite an interesting experience. So the play draws together parts of his various dramas, some of their letters, some of her autobiography, some original cabaret-style songs, sprinkling of fiction, or shall we call it interpretation,
right,
into a 70-minute braiding together of fact and fiction, fantasy and passion over at the Mondavi.
Wonderful. Now, when you say 70 minutes, you probably know the exact number of minutes because this is a one-woman show.
It is indeed.
And you're the woman.
I am.
Yeah. And so it's probably a mix of joyful expression but also grueling endurance in order to perform this particular show during the, what do we call it, a two-week run that you have in front of you?
Yeah, grueling in a couple of ways, but hopefully excitingly grueling. Grueling in the sense that Tilly's own life was interesting, and her life with Frank was both very loving and very tempestuous.
Mm-hmm.
And it resulted in her actually booking herself into a hotel room and taking poison towards the end of their marriage. She was found 3 days later, and the poison found its way out of her body through her skin. And she took about 3 months to recover from this serious attempt at suicide. And her skin would become hard as parchment, and one day she pulled the skin of her hands off like a pair of gloves, and her old life was mapped on the glove skin hands, and on her real hands was new skin that was very, very soft and fresh, like a baby's. So I took this idea of peeling away layers, skins, partly because Frank Vedekind also loved the imagery of snakes and animals.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other way that the play is grueling is that I decided it would be really good to actually try and shake off sloth, like a snake does, various skins throughout the play. So I start off dressed in 6 costumes, and I end up dressed in 1. So, and the 6th costume is a big fur coat. So it's grueling in terms of real physical endurance here, as
right.
well as imaginative leaping through hoops.
Now, has the air conditioning been adjusted to make it more possible for you to, especially in the early moments of the play, withstand wearing 6 layers at once?
Andy, I'm more concerned that my audience are at a very comfortable temperature, so I endure the heat so they remain in comfort.
Wonderful. Well, let's remind them, because I know people will want to see this. Let's remind them about where they can see this. I know that I've seen you on stage at the Celeste Turner Wright Theater, the main theater on campus. This show is taking place over at the Mondavi Center. Tell me about the studio theater there. And what sort of interesting things people can expect in terms of the setting of this particular play.
Well, I'll say a little bit, and then I'll probably let my director say a little bit
Great.
More, because he was responsible for quite a few of the artistic choices. I was fascinated by the turn of the century cabaret dark terrain of this, and you know, the fact that somebody in essence lost her identity to her husband, because Frank did very much change Tilly according to what he wanted. So I then relied on my colourful director to bring the pizzazz and the elements of surprise to make this an evening of entertainment rather than deep depression.
Right.
We wouldn't want that now, would we? So perhaps it might be appropriate to introduce my director.
Let's do that now. Miles Anderson is here, and he's the director of the show that we're talking about, called Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love, opening tomorrow evening at the Mondavi Center. Miles Anderson has just returned from the Old Globe Theater in San Diego, where he received great acclaim for his performance of King George in The Madness of King George III, and where he will be returning next year to play Salieri in Amadeus and Prospero in The Tempest. What juicy roles these are. I could say much more about your extensive biography on stage, in front of a TV camera, in front of movie cameras, but let's get right to it. Miles Anderson, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry
Thank
and Technology
you very
Hour.
Much, Dr. Andy.
Great
well,
to
I mean,
have you.
It's great just to be a director for a bit, because actually I found that the secret of directing mm-hmm. is to surround yourself with very, very brilliant people.
Right.
And then you actually don't have to do very much.
Isn't that a good feeling?
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful. So I've got Bella, and I've got David, and I've got John Iacovelli doing the stage design for me, and Maggie Morgan doing the costumes, and the wonderful Tom Munn doing the lighting, which is absolutely brilliant. And, I've taken this sort of... Bella gave me this rather dark piece and said, would you like to direct this dark, rather dark piece? And I said, I would, but I'd like to make it a lot of fun. So it's become... It's become a great journey. It's set in an old, disused circus.
Mm-hmm.
And it has lots of magical moments, because I think that magical moments are really important. We constantly try to enthrall and excite the audience.
Wonderful. So when you speak of magic here, you mean not only the magic of one character's discoveries about herself or the... the magic of a well-sung song. But you mean...
I mean physical magic.
Physical
well.
Magic, like effects,
like
and visual surprises.
Absolutely.
Bright colors.
Bright colors, lots of bright colors. And it, because it's a play that's been designed to tour, all those effects have to be thought out as simply as possible.
Right.
We can't spend millions or thousands or even hundreds on the design because we don't have them.
Right.
This is UC Davis and not Broadway. It's a great journey to be able to try and create something magical with very little at hand. But I've been ably helped by the guys in the workshop over in the theatre, I think we've got a really exciting evening for people to look forward to.
Wonderful. I've seen you around town once or twice as a visitor, but I think this is the first time that you've directed a production here at UC Davis.
Is that right? Yeah.
So tell me about some of the joys and challenges. You had mentioned some of the financial restrictions, different from Broadway.
Yeah.
What are some of the other things that come to mind when you reflect upon your experience of directing Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love?
Well, I think working with the extremely talented Bella Merlin, who constantly surprises, aggravates, excites,
infuriates,
uh-huh. and challenges. And because you've only got one person, you've got one person to shout at all the time.
Right.
Or encourage all the time.
And we've had two great students working with us.
And we've had two wonderful students, yeah. Reed Wagner, who they probably everybody knows, don't they? Who's a great stalwart of the theatre.
Mm-hmm.
And Saba Rahba, who's our assistant stage manager. Reed is my assistant director and my stage manager. And they have just proved to be absolutely wonderful. They're old beyond their years. Very young bodies with very, very old heads on them. And it's been an absolute delight working with them.
Excellent. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to remind you that you're listening to KDBS on a Wednesday afternoon. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. And we're talking about a production of Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love, that opens tomorrow evening here on the UC Davis campus at the Mondavi Center, at the Vanderhoof Studio Theater, which is part of the Mondavi Center. We're going to take a quick break and hear an important public service announcement from the Linux Users Group of Davis. And then when we return, we're going to hear some more about the musical elements of this upcoming production. This is KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
Thank you.
Thank you, John Coltrane, and welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. If you'd like to find out more about the public affairs programs that we offer here at KDVS, then you can always point your browser at kdvs.org. That's kdavis without the vowels .org. You can find out about whatever happens to be playing at the moment that you're tuning in via your computer, as well as archive shows from the previous week available at the KDVS calendar. That's kdvs.org. My next guest this afternoon is David Rusner. David Rusner is a composer and a sound designer. He works as an academic and a practitioner of theater music. He teaches and researches at the drama department of the University of Exeter. He's published the book Theater as Music, that's in 2003, and numerous articles on the manifold relationships of music and theater, which won him the Thurnau Award for Music Theater Studies in 2007. He's devised music for a range of productions and context form applied theater to practice his research from children's theater to contemporary drama. And I feel lucky to have him right here in the studio.
The pleasure's all mine. Thank you very much for having
me. Welcome to the show. Yes, thank you. So I promised people at home some technology. Mm. They might not have expected it so early. But tell me, how did technology come into play with the work that you did in collaboration with the folks who we've heard thus far, Bella Merlin, and especially Miles Anderson, the director of this show?
Well, it's been really interesting because since I've last done theater music, which has actually been quite a while because I've been really immersed in my academic life and being a scholar and actually running the department for some time, and that obviously took away quite a few of the creative energies that I used to think that I had them anyway. And since I left off, and I had done quite a bit of theater music, which was live, which was sort of engaging with live instruments and live voices, etc. Technology has really undergone a quantum leap, you know, and it was only because I knew that was there, not quite knowing whether I'd be able to master that, but I knew those technologies were available, that I kind of said yes to this really quite absurd idea of me, you know, doing music to a show that was being rehearsed 5,000 miles away and eight hours of time difference away.
Right.
And that was quite a challenge. My own challenge was to kind of come up with solutions that made it possible for me to communicate music, you know, via the internet, send sound files, send MP3s, and create them in a way that you know, Bell and Miles could get a clear sense of them, even though they were only drafted. They were perhaps, you know, quick sketches of something, which, of course, with modern music technology software, such as, actually, I did most of this with GarageBand, which is a standard Mac program. It's off the shelf. It's really nothing terribly fancy, but it completely did the job. So that was the one challenge, I suppose. And the other challenge was really to embrace technologies that made the playback during the show particularly flexible, because I didn't want it to be, if you burn it on a CD, you know, you can't change it on the night. It's very difficult to just say, oh, could this one sound come in a bit earlier and overlay the other one, and so on and so on. So at the beginning, I thought about several CD players, and, you know, I was nearly, you know, suggesting cassettes and stuff like that. That was kind of almost as backwards as I seemed to have been at the time. And since then, I've learned about a number of software such as QLab, which is it's actually a free download if you go for the basic stereo version, which is a wonderful program which simply allows you to sort of program tracks in a certain order, change that order any time. You can build in fades, you can build in overlaps, you can have them play at the same time with you know, very, very specifically programmed time delays. You can in the pro version, which luckily the department bought, you can actually also address different speakers at the same time, and that was really what made the work on the sound very, very exciting. The other thing that made it exciting, apart from the artistic benefits of being with two wonderful and imaginative artists, was that the Mundavi, the studio space there, has a lovely sound system. It just sounds great, and the fact that I could play with very nice speakers and a very potent subwoofer, which is situated under the audience, just made something that sounded decent on my headphones sound quite exciting, at least for me in the space. And that's always a lovely moment, because theater music is there in the moment, in the interaction with a room full of people, with a room full of props of actors, or in this case, one actress. And that's where the chemistry, if it happens, happens. And that's, that's very exciting.
Oh, definitely. Well, how wonderful, too, that you got this assignment that really forced you to push your way into discovering new tools and to imagine possibilities that might be helpful to you with productions hereafter, even if you're much closer to your director and to your cast.
No, absolutely. I mean, and also even for my teaching, I thought I rediscovered a few tools that I think because they're actually very intuitive to use. I mean, that was the great thing that I remember when I first bought my very, very first sort of edition of Logic, which is one of the sort of standard music editing softwares. This was probably Logic 2.0 or something, and those who use it will remember that this was the late 90s or something like that. It was incredibly clumsy. It was incredibly, you had to be almost a programmer to sort of master this and kind of patch things and get it working. And now it's so intuitive, it's so drag and drop, but in a really good way. And the presets are wonderful. Even the software instruments that, you know, I used a lot of what is called virtual instruments because I did sadly not have a little orchestra at my disposal.
Right.
And also that would have made the process very slow and very clumsy. But because I could simply play a double bass and a little violin and a clarinet, and that has become a bit of a favorite of the team, a glockenspiel, which is this is kind of my way of tapping into the whole circus theme, of course. It was just possible to have that kind of ensemble, those kind of sound textures, very, very easily available and in very decent quality.
That's wonderful. Well, if you folks listening at home would like to see some evidence of what we've been talking about, if you want to see how impressive the final product is, then you might be interested in this production, which is Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love. It plays from October 14th to 24th at the Vanderhoof Studio Theater, which is part of the Mondavi Center for the Performing Arts. And I'm sure there are people who are listening who would be interested in getting tickets. Do you remember, Bella, the easiest way for them to do that?
To go along to the Mondavi is probably the most straightforward. The box office is just a hop across campus. You can get them online. I'll leave you to read out things like websites.
Okay.
Too technological for me. But I'd suggest hopping over to the... And you can get them on the night, unless we sell out, of course, but hope.
which could happen. So tickets in theater and more information is at theaterdance.ucdavis.edu. You can also phone 754-ARTS, which is a phone number celebrating the arts that predates any of us being here at UC Davis. So if you've been a fan of arts and performance at UC Davis for decades now, then you've probably memorized 754-ARTS. You can use it to find out more about this particular production. Well, let's see. I wanted to, before we move on to our second David and to Claire Chambers, who are here, I wanted to ask Bella a little bit more about this character who you're playing. And I think one thing that's interesting with a character like this, maybe seen from the outside, might be seen as kind of a victim or as weak or someone who was entirely controlled by this man in her life. Do you feel that one of your jobs is to personalize her in such a way that we do see her strengths and ways that she resists this sort of control?
Absolutely. And we do hope it's a story with a happy ending, ultimately. And I think all of us have at some point in our lives been in a relationship where we're aware there's a stronger character who to some extent is shaping us. And often we're complicit in that shaping. And this is really dealing with all sorts of issues of identity. The other thing is, of course, no performance can exist without an audience. And that what we've done with this piece is make the audience very much a friend to Tilly. There's a lot of direct address to the audience. There's a lot of asking them rhetorical, but if their answers come back, that's fine, questions.
Right.
And really, it's the exciting thing tomorrow night is going to really feel that sensation of when there are people there other than those, the creative team who have seen it several times already. Because it is about somebody telling their story, being witnessed, sharing those situations and just tapping into things that we've probably all experienced when we fall really in love with somebody and we want to be everything to them, and sometimes you lose a little bit of yourself along the way, and it's how you keep those two things in balance, really.
That makes sense. Before we take another break to hear a public service announcement, can you tell us about the full title, Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love?
Yes. Nobody, the bit, that comes from the fact quite a few people have heard of Frank Vedekind. Nobody's heard of Tilly, so it's like Tilly who kind of thing. The other is, if the truth be told, Andy, when she was 17, she lost her virginity out of wedlock. And her brother was so shocked that he said, you can no longer have our family name. And she started to call herself Tilly Niemann, which is very close to no person.
Mm-hmm.
And the German for nobody is Niemand. And so it's sort of playing with the fact that she chose at some point in her life to actually basically call herself Tilly Nobody. The Catastrophes of Love bit is a quotation from Vedekind, and the whole thing was something like, Catastrophes of Love, a very German story, but probably a very human story, really. So I just threaded that in there because I like the idea of it.
Well, it's a great phrase. And one that you probably read in the original, because I know that you had to dust off your schoolgirl German and get out your dictionary and start delving into 100-year-old letters and so forth. Obviously, that worked out for you.
The autobiography I did translate from start to finish, and then I met a wonderful collaborator who just so happened to be David's mother, who was over in Davis my very first quarter here, Margaret Greiner, and she's been a terrific help, and she's coming over next week to see the show.
Wonderful. If you've translated the autobiography, are you thinking of just adding that as one of your publication credits?
I wrote a chapter on the autobiography that was published in about 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, I'd love to do like an annotated version of the autobiography. It would just be a matter of finding the right publisher to take that on.
Excellent. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. You're just hearing the voice of Bella Merlin. She is the deviser and the performer, the lead actress in this one-woman show called Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love. It opens tomorrow evening, October 14th, and runs until the 24th at the Vanderhoof Studio Theater at the Mondavi Center for the Performing Arts. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back. October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and Tattoo Joe's would like to remind the women of our community to have screening mammograms at recommended intervals. Today's low-dose, state-of-the-art mammography can detect tumors too small to be discovered by touch. Don't delay. early diagnosis means that you'll have better than a 95% chance of successful treatment. This message is brought to you by Tattoo Joe's in Vacaville. You may visit them online at tattoojoeslive.com. They're on the air because they care about the health of the women in our community. We're listening to some John Coltrane this afternoon, as you probably recognized. This comes from, I believe, an 8-CD set, merely called Jazz. This tune is called The Night Has a Thousand Eyes. And The Night Having a Thousand Eyes is an appropriate song to play behind this conversation that we're going to have now about an upcoming symposium that happens a week from Friday, the 22nd of October, on the UC Davis campus. Bella Merlin, who we were just hearing from, has taken some of the themes of her play, Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love, and thought about ways that more people in the UC Davis community can talk about some of the themes that are raised therein. So, Bella, I'm hoping that you could talk to me a little bit about the vision you had for this upcoming symposium on October 22nd.
I wanted to get together a group of interdisciplinary people to talk about the idea of how we all create and enact our identities, and that it's something that actors do for their profession, but most of us are doing unconsciously and consciously all the time. And I wanted it to be quite a performative a symposium as well, because I'm looking at practices research and the way in which, particularly in the humanities, our research doesn't necessarily manifest in a book or an article or a patent, etc. So I've brought together a host of very exciting people who, throughout the day, next Friday, 22nd of October, over in Lab A in the Theatre and Dance Department from 10 a.m. through till 5:30, different panels throughout the day are going to come together and share their experience of this. One of our presenters, being an extremely exciting poet, called Dr. Andy, who's going to come and share some of his own way of expressing his identity through the poetic medium.
That's true, to a certain extent. It'll be more expressing other people's identities through a poetic medium, but I suppose that's part of the point. Well, perhaps even more excitedly, we've got two folks here who are going to participate in this symposium, and I'd like to introduce you all to them. The first is David Orokorvitz, and he's a sociologist. He's a winner of the PSA Graduate Student Award at UC Davis for his paper, Elite Emotion Managers, The Case of Novice and Semi-Professional Actors. And his research addresses the way in which actors manage their feelings and thus create and shape their onstage and social identities. David Orokorvitz, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you, Dr. Andy. I'm very excited to be here.
Great to have you here. So tell me about some of the obviously relevant research that you've done, and if how you feel as a sociologist sharing a stage with performance poets and big shot actors and directors and other people who are used to entertaining large audiences with their craft.
Well, I'm frankly really excited to be a part of this symposium. Bella approached me, I think, last spring about possibly doing this. And, I mean, I was originally kind of hooked on this idea of creating an acting identity. My research really focuses on creating an acting identity, specifically performers' identities. And my approach to research actually has put me on stage for dance pieces, for theater pieces. It led me to perform as a parade performer at a theme park.
Great.
Here in the U.S. So being in front of people, I'm very comfortable with, actually. That part's not intimidating. I think the level of accomplishment is a little more intimidating. I feel very lucky to be a part of this group.
Wonderful. Well, you sound way more qualified than I will be when I am up on that stage. If I were listening at home and I heard someone talk about being a parade performer, I'd probably phone in and ask for some details on that. So I'll go ahead and ask, how is it that one becomes part of a performer in a parade, and what exactly did you do, or are you allowed to say?
No, I can totally say. It was a total accident, actually. The original plan, so this was for my dissertation research. Mm-hmm. My original plan for the dissertation, I was really interested in looking at actors in different performance spaces and how the type of performance space shapes the work that actors are doing. And one of my committee members suggested that I think about theme park characters. So my original goal was actually to be a theme park character, but I lacked the skill set of being the right height, which is apparently important and not something I can change.
Yeah.
So, but I was offered an opportunity to be a parade performer at this park. Wonderland is what I call the park. And it was a great experience. Changed my dissertation topic completely. I'm completely focused on theme park entertainment work, and it gave me the experience of doing some really bizarre, fun work for a year and a half of my life.
Wow, that sounds great.
Yeah.
About 10 years ago, I had a student, I think she was a communications major, but she had trouble working in collaborative groups with her peers because she had to go to, is it Disneyland or Disney World that we have here in California?
I think it's Disneyland.
I think so, too. So she had to go to Disneyland every Thursday evening to perform a character for the whole weekend, and she could never tell us what the character was, but she dropped hints over and over again that she was Alice of Alice in Wonderland as she was, you know, marching through Cinderella's castle and, you know, all the other things that one does.
That's fantastic. I mean, I can tell you what I did. Yeah. I don't have nearly the same secrets to worry about. I was a knight. I was a reindeer. I was a drummer. I was a stilt walker.
Wow.
Yeah, I get to do some really interesting things. I learned how to walk on 3-foot stilts, which is a skill that I will never really probably be able to use again, unfortunately.
Nevertheless, I would leave it on the CV because you never know.
Absolutely. Maybe lecture in stilts at some
absolutely
point. I think that's important.
That will help them certainly look up to you. All right. So let's go to Claire Chambers, who's also here in the studio. She's a PhD candidate in theater and dance, as well as a researcher into religion and performance. Claire Chambers investigates intersections between theology and theatricality, between liturgy and the language of performance, as well as spirituality and performance practice and ritual and reality. Those are a lot of binary oppositions, Claire Chambers.
You can say that.
Tell me about some of the work that you'll be doing on Friday as part of this symposium.
Yeah, actually, David and I have some in common that I'm very pleased to learn about, because a great portion of my dissertation research has to do with ethnographic research into communities who perform religious identities as groups, and that's something that I'm very interested in. So in order to do that research, I have participated in these groups and been there, been part of the ritual, become part of a community, a couple of these communities, to be quite honest. It's an interesting ethical situation as a researcher. How involved can you get, especially when something is as touchy and delicate as religious belief?
And especially when they're eager to welcome you, I'm sure.
That's another ethical question. Yes, how can I maintain that distance but still have a finger in or a toe through the door, so to speak? So the particular performance that I'm presenting on happens at Easter time, just before Easter. It's the Ash Wednesday liturgy that a group of Episcopal ministers bring to the Mission District in San Francisco. Last spring was the second time they have done this. So it's this group of ministers and lay people who literally perform this rite, this ritual, on the street and invite the community as a whole to participate. So they're setting up an altar on the sidewalk next to the subway station where commuters are going in and coming out.
They're lighting their thuribles with the incense in it and sensing the streets, blessing the streets, and inviting people to participate by offering them the ashes of the ritual for Ash Wednesday. So I followed a priest who is a director of liturgy at one of these churches in San Francisco around the streets and watched as she and an assistant ashed people, literally. The ritual is that the minister traces a cross of ash on the forehead of the penitent and reminds them that they are dust. and so these priests were going in and out of businesses along the sidewalk saying, can we offer you ashes for Ash Wednesday? And so there were various responses to this, but many people said yes. Some people said no. Some people just kept walking by. But what I was really interested in this whole community performance was, what's actually happening in this exchange, in this gift that's being given, that can also be seen as an economic exchange, what's being asked for as mm-hmm. well as given, and how is a particular kind of community of belief being performed in the moment? So I came up with this term. I'm calling it public ecclesiology,
wow.
that the church is something that is latent, sort of within the street, within the public sphere, but being exposed through this ritual in various ways, even in resistant ways. So that's just a little bit about this particular project of mine.
That is a great sneak preview. Well, could you remind us one more time, Bella, the specifics on this event? It's a week from Friday, the 22nd of October. Where do people go and what overall can they expect?
It's in Lab A, which is 101 Wright Hall in the Theatre and Dance Department. It kicks off, the first presentation is at 10:15. There are four different panels. We're looking at shaping identity, presenting identity. There'll be more context on the whole Vedicant thing because it's very much linked into the production. Performing identity, or I think I said that, and the idea of practices research. The event, of course, is free. Limited places. We only have about 45 seats, but people can come and go throughout the day. And we hope it'll be full of discussion, lots of fun. One of our great guests is going to be Bernadette Daly-Swanson, who works at the Shields Library and is a big Second Life expert.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to that one.
I would think so. Well, and let's remind everyone. In fact, Miles, why don't I ask you to jump up and read something for us so we can get another voice here. And that's just the title and the show dates. We can't mention prices, but I think people would like to hear your voices. Remind us where we might want to go starting tomorrow evening.
It's at the Vanderhoff Studio Theater and the Mondavi Center from Thursday to Saturday, that's October the 14th to the 16th at 8 o'clock in the evening. And then it's on Wednesday, Saturday, October the 20th to the 23rd, also at 8 o'clock, and Sunday, October the 17th and the 24th at 2 p.m.
And the title again of the show?
The title is Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love.
Excellent. Well, I'd like to thank all of you for joining me this afternoon and giving us a preview of what we might be able to see tomorrow evening and for the next 2 weeks. And I look forward to seeing you on stage, Bella. And seeing you, David and Claire, a week from Friday, and to see all of us at the after party. I'm sure there will be many of them. So thanks so much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, folks, stick around because Manny Iyer is my next guest. He'll be finishing off the show with us as we take on a little bit more technology this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. I'm excited to introduce you all to my next guest today. Manny Iyer is the CEO of Kwanzoo. That's K-W-A-N-Z-O-O. That's a multi-channel marketing platform that drives more leads and sales by engaging users and serving targeted offers that get propagated virally via email and social media. Kwanzoo campaigns run inside email newsletters on websites, Facebook, LinkedIn, and community pages, as well as promoting affiliate sites and paid advertising channels. I've invited Manny Iyer to come join us here on the radio show because I met him at a social media and email marketing conference, maybe about 3 weeks ago now, and really enjoyed his presentation. Wanted to introduce him to all of you and let you know that he's going to be appearing at a social media monitoring conference in San Francisco a week from tomorrow. Manny Iyer, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I really enjoyed your presentation at a social media and email conference in San Francisco last month. You followed one of the keynote speakers and offered some really interesting complimentary ideas for the people at the conference to think about. Coming up a week from tomorrow, on October 21st in San Francisco, there's a social media monitoring conference. And I'm wondering if you could tell me, for people who are listening in today, what exactly is social media monitoring and why is it important?
Absolutely. So, there's an interesting trend going on where, you know, for all of us who've been on the Internet for the last 10 years, we probably spent a lot of our time searching on Google. And,
right.
And one of the changes that's been happening over the past 4 or 5 years or so is now, you know, you have some 700 million odd people, users, that are now spending more and more time on, social media, social platforms, social networks.
Right.
Such as Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and there's a host of others. And the amazing thing that's happening is that the amount of information that is out there on the Internet, on the web, about anybody or any company, any business, any individual, any brand, is there's explosive growth in that information.
Right.
And so social media monitoring for businesses ends up being all about how is my business being seen or perceived out on the Internet? On the web, what are people saying about my brand? What are they people saying about me? So monitoring and keeping track of, you know, how you were being talked about on the Internet has become extremely critical for everybody. And so that's one of the key themes. So it's going to be all around what does it mean for brands? What does it mean for individuals? You know, and then once you listen, there's a whole idea of listening. So you first need to find out what people are saying, but then you need to react to it.
Right.
And there's the engagement aspect. So first you listen, which is the monitoring and listening part, and then there's the engagement part, and that comes in the form of either participating in different communities, writing in different blogs. It could be providing the right kind of information to your customers. Kind of engaging them in a variety of different ways, maybe offers, incentives, promotions, coupons, you know, what have you.
From my point of view as a writing teacher, which is one of the hats that I wear here at University of California at Davis, I'm always interested in new approaches for businesses and for the rest of us, including nonprofits, to use writing as a means of communication and collaboration and building audiences, building communities. So I'm really pleased that so many people in the business world now really have a responsibility to blog, to write, to interact, and writing has become so much more important. And one of the trickiest parts is that it's also become so much more disparate, that it's spread out across many different social media, as you mentioned.
Absolutely. And you know, the other interesting phenomenon going on is that you now need to learn to write less and say what you need to say.
Right.
You got to fit it all in 140 characters on Twitter. And you know, the point being, people have very limited attention span. I mean, and they're being bombarded with emails. They you know, they literally have this flood of Twitter streams going through their, you know, inbox all day long. They open up their Facebook. They have the Facebook feeds that have so many messages. So, I mean, writing skills are more important than ever.
And as you say, economy, conciseness, knowing how to say something almost poetically with as few words as possible.
Absolutely. And the other thing to note is each of these social platforms have their own lingua, or, you know, their own language.
Interesting.
So you don't want to be a misfit. It's like you go to, you know, you go to Italy, you know, you got to fit in like an Italian.
Right.
So you don't kind of stick out. In the same way, there's a language in Facebook, there's a language in Twitter, there's a language in LinkedIn, and it's all different.
Well, there's always been work for linguists in the world of computers and programming. And now it seems to me that that new jobs, new positions are being created as well.
That's right. There are social media managers. There are social monitoring specialists. There are people who really specialize in the kind of tools that you need to do all this monitoring we're talking about. There's a slew of new kind of jobs that are opening up. It's the perfect time for people to think about kind of retooling, you know, their own careers and looking at the whole world of social media.
Absolutely. Well, we just have a moment left. Mani Iyer of Kwanzu, can you give us a sneak preview, if you haven't already, about some of the topics that you'll be taking on as a presenter at the Social Media Monitoring Conference in San Francisco next weekend or next Thursday?
Right. So Kwanzu, again, some of the areas that we specialize have to do more with the engagement that comes after the listening part.
Right.
So, and that's the area where we really are helping a variety of different companies. We help them with their email marketing, where we help drive more what are called conversion events, where you're getting people to actually act on the emails that come in. And we do that in the form of quick, easy, interactive, you know, kind of polls, what we call smart polls that can be embedded inside the emails, smart quizzes, smart shares, those kind of social sharing units, which kind of drive social sharing actions from inside emails. You can have incentive-based promotions and sharing, you know, opt-ins, which is, you know, telling people, getting people to opt in to receive more information from a company, things of that nature. So those are some of the topics that we're going to be talking about.
Lots of different options. Could you remind me, Mani Iyer, of the website for Kwanzu?
Very easy. It is kwanzu.com. That is kwanzoo.com.
Excellent. Well, Mani Iyer, I look forward to seeing you again next Thursday in San Francisco. Thanks so much for appearing on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Great. Thank you.
Take care. Well, folks, we've come to the end of this particular program. I'd like to thank all of my guests, Bella Merlin, the deviser and performer of a new show, Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love, which opens tomorrow at the Mondavi Center. Miles Anderson, the director, was also here, as was David Rusner, the composer and sound designer, joining us from Germany and England for the next couple weeks of this production. David Orokorvitz and Claire Chambers will be a part of the symposium on campus discussing some of these topics a week from Friday. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is all the time we have for everybody's favorite poetry and technology program. I'll see you next week on Dr. Andy's